Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back to the Hold That podcast, everybody. As always, I am your host, Chris Branch, along with my co-host here, Brody Miller. We are of The Athletic. Brody, I think this is a pizza podcast now. What do you think?
I'm amazed that like we talk all this in depth about all these things that we care about deeply, and then we talk about pizza for like 3 minutes, not even 3 minutes. And I think that's like 90% of our mentions now is just pizza thoughts and criticism. So I think you're right.
A lot of opinions. I got some opinions also from the email and other platforms. You know, some people hate Johnny's. Some people love Johnny's. People have very hard opinions on crust size. I mean, I'm just...
A lot of hard opinions.
I'm blown away.
It's like if you're into tavern style, it seems like that is like a personality trait. That's the big takeaway I've had. Like if you like it, you will not accept slander. It's like this is the best thing ever.
Well, I might view be one of those guys.
Like, it is perfectly enjoyable. I like it. I don't have like a lot of thoughts.
Well, here's I'm springing this on you live, Brody. We did not plan for this, everybody. I think that if we ever do a live show, it should be an adult pizza party.
I think I know the right place.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, if that place is listening, if anybody has a pizza place that they want to offer us up for a live show. Talk to me, talk to us, slide in the DM, slide in the email, we'll do it. But and you know, here's a great segue for you, Brody. In that show, we would probably talk about the football team, would we not?
Possibly. I mean, it depends. If our numbers keep thriving on pizza content, I mean, we might just pivot. I don't know, but possibly.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some football. You had a very busy week of LSU football. Brody wrote a great story that went up over the weekend that you guys should check out if you have not on The Athletic. And Will Campbell, man of the hour, the young man of the hour, let me emphasize, he is an incoming true freshman who is already the anchor of the offensive line, possibly. Correct, Brody? Fill me in.
That it's true. I mean, and it's I'll preface everything with this, that we'd all been noticing Will Campbell looked really good for the first 2 weeks, right? I mentioned in notebooks, I saw him win some one-on-ones, he did some good stuff. But, I mean, from the literal first day of practice, Brian Kelly was like, he was raving about Will Campbell, but he was going out of his way also to say, do I think he's like ready to start? No. You know, like he was saying he looks great, but he's like, it's not like I think a freshman could start at tackle. You know, and I think we've seen every single day at practice them just trying different stuff. So like when we saw Will Campbell getting first team reps one day, we made nothing of it. Like, hey, let's not overreact, because they are just trying stuff. And Will Campbell is a freshman. He's a promising one. But all of a sudden, you know, I'm at the coaches clinic on Friday, you know, LSU coaches clinic, and I'm, you know, trying to chat up some coaches and things like that. And two of them went out of their way to be like, you know what, you know, Will Campbell, man, he's the best of all of them right now. And it was like, he's the most impressive guy. And it's like, oh crap, like this isn't just a promising freshman. He's just the real deal. And so then, you know, we come back Saturday and he is once again getting first team left tackle reps, which mattered because, again, I can't think of a single practice where like anybody's really been at the same spot consistently. And Kelly even said, you know, all right, this is going to be the part of spring where you start seeing, you know, guys kind of start getting where they're going to be. And, you know, and then Kelly comes and tells us, which really shocked us, and to the point of the actual story, the offensive line's looking much more consistent, and it all started when we moved Will Campbell to left tackle. And he wasn't afraid. The same guy who 2 weeks ago was like, guys, chill on this, he's not like going to start, is now coming out there saying, I think, you know, this guy has shifted our line and made everything better. I think he's really impressive. And yes, he's a freshman, but he's also 6'6", 310, and a mobile one at that. He's strong, and he has technique, so you know he can probably handle himself. And the idea that now this guy, you know, and there's also I'll hold that thought for a second, but I think that's really fascinating that all of a sudden he is the dude. And more importantly, I think what that does, which we'll get into in a second, is what that opens up for the rest of the line. But it right. is really shocking to see this guy who, since he was a sophomore in high school, really has been like, oh, wow, this is the rare superstar Louisiana offensive tackle. You know as well as I, they really don't develop them here at offensive tackle that well for whatever reason. It's been a weakness. Mm-hmm. And for him to come in and be exactly as sold as five-star kid, that's just huge for LSU because they've just, as much as Louisiana struggled developing it, so has LSU on its own.
Well, it's really hard to imagine, maybe outside of the secondary, a position that needed a solid answer yeah. more than the offensive line to, like you said, you know, and you wrote in your story about how if he is sticking at that tackle spot, then it frees up, you know, maybe the more veteran guys that's going to play like Cam Wire, Garrett, well, I'm blanking now, of course. I almost said Garrett Dellinger. But it frees up a lot of those older guys to move around and to be more versatile and just to really shore up the strengths. And Campbell being a strength early is something that I don't think we really expected fully, right? Am I wrong?
No, not at all. I mean, no, you're right.
So, I mean, it's just like, it's really encouraging to the fan in me. What do you think about how all the other guys are moving around?
Yeah, I think there's something. I mean, I think I can say this even better, as we always joke about me being a Bengals fan, and like, also I'm kind of a line nerd in some way, but like, I think the misconception is with offensive line that like you need just like five, you know, it's all about having like five studs when sometimes it's really about having like one stud, and then that takes up so much gravity, you know, for using like basketball terminology, and then that like opens things up, and it's really about limiting weaknesses, right? I think that's really what offensive line play is about. It's right. like you want a stud or two, of course, but so much of it's about not having more than one weak link or none if you can avoid it, you know, and that's the story of the Bengals line, right? It's that they had like two obvious weak links and that opened everything
up. Not anymore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, thank you. But I think, you know, what Campbell, he's just this special talent. And of course, I don't think he's going to be all SEC as a freshman, but that does kind of elevate everything a little bit when you got that guy that people are excited about. But anyway, to your question. Yeah, I think what it does is, okay, you know, for example, I think we've seen Cam Wire was kind of always like the assumed left tackle. And Cam Wire is a solid player, but Cam Wire has injury problems. And, you know, he's not, you know, he's been around for a while. And, you know, that goes sometimes. He's solid, but he's probably never going to be like a stud. And Marcus Dumervil has been taking reps at right tackle a lot. He's been getting a lot of first team reps. Now you can focus a bit, right? All right, left tackle. Let's say hypothetically that is set in stone. I don't think it's set in stone, but pretty close to it. Say he has that. Okay, now you can have these two guys really getting those first team right tackle reps, really competing, really figuring out one of them can be like the swing guy and, you know, all that. And all of a sudden, those guys can get better. And then Garrett Dellinger, for example, you know, he's a guy, top 100 recruit last year, saw the field at like three different positions, cross training multiple spots. He's out with that shoulder injury right now. Well, now you don't feel an extreme pressure to make him your right tackle when he comes back like you would have before, possibly. Now you can be like, all right, where do we need him most? All right, maybe he's guard. Maybe he's center because he's cross-training there too. You know, or maybe he does go to right tackle, but you have flexibility there. And then, you know, those guard spots, it's like, all right, maybe you move Dellinger inside. You know, Miles Frazier and Tremont Shorts, the two transfers, both of them were tackles at their last stop. But hey, it looks, most of what I've seen, they've been taking more guard reps, which makes sense. You know, you change divisions and all of a sudden the physical dimensions change too. And like, those guys might be your starting guards. Or Marlon Martinez, who's also been hurt. He's going to compete at center, but now you have flexibility there where he's going to compete at center and he can compete at guard. And Cardell Thomas is actually making growth. I should acknowledge that. But I'm mentioning every freaking guy on the line, but it's a long way of saying, I just think when you start locking down one spot and you have like an anchor, it gives you more comfort and creativity with the rest to really, then you can focus. And I think focus helps development where it's like, you know what you're doing. You're not just getting tossed around everywhere. Does that make any sense?
It made total sense. And I think there's a lot of, I just think it's encouraging overall because, like I said, it's an anchor, it's an answer at one spot, and it frees up a lot of talented guys to slide into place other places. I mean, like you said, it's all about weak links.
But, yeah. And I think they're getting to a point. First off, they're still recruiting Tyler Steen from Vanderbilt. It's going to be a tough one to get from what I gather. But at the same time, like, he also would all of a sudden mean you were really set at tackle if you land him. They really want him. But also, like, I think they are getting closer to the no weak link thing. You know, I don't know how great it's going to be, but as we've talked about, I think the main thing Brad Davis did a great job of throughout start to finish in 2021 was getting those, like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, getting those guys who were like cast offs, like, to suddenly be like 79 overalls. You know what I mean? Like, oh, right. you can play him. You know, like Marlon Martinez mm-hmm. is one of the best examples. I think Doomerville's probably an example. Dellinger, like, it's like, oh, okay, I don't know if they're studs yet, but you can play him. And that's so important. So all of a sudden, you feel like you have like seven or eight guys who you can at least play. The tricky thing is, are any of those other guys studs? I don't have the answer right yet. And we didn't even mention, by the way, Charles Turner has been playing really well at center. Kelly does not think he's locked it down by any means, but still, that's the biggest question mark of the whole spring. And by the way, Martinez is still 100% in that competition. He's really good. But I think Kelly's been really pleased just with how Turner, fourth-year guy, really good athlete. It was one of those guys who came in as like a tight end hybrid, but they knew we're going to make him into a lineman. So he's really athletic. Him holding it down as well as he is also promising, because, you know, you at least have a guy, you know?
Right. I mean, it kind of shifts it in my mind from a position of worry to a surprising position of strength.
I don't know if I go far as saying strength. You know what I mean? We got to find the middle here, but
I know
it's definitely not like a glare. There's at least some answers. You know what I mean? Like, before it was just five question marks. Now you're like, okay, you know, we should hold our own. Got some stability. Yeah. And
I just feel like there's a lot of talented guys in the room. Maybe that's the optimist in me.
No, I agree. I think the upside, you're finally at a point where you actually have some upside, which I feel like they haven't had upside really in a while. Right. And I don't know how stable they'll be, but I do feel like the upside's there. And also, we should mention, Emory Jones is still coming. And there's some people who think, like, even he can actually get in the mix. Like, he's really talented, really good recruit out of Baton Rouge. So, like, you know, I think there's some pieces to play with there. And the other thing I'll throw in with Campbell that's just, like, I don't think you'll ever hear a coach say this. This is me speculating. But I also bet there's a little bit of, again, they know this year isn't going to be some superstar year, right? And it's like, Ty goes to the long term, right? Does that make sense? Like, say mm-hmm. it's close and maybe like Campbell's showing more signs. I think it's going to be really valuable if he's ready to make him left tackle right now. So he's getting this like tons of valuable experience, like, you know, like a young quarterback, like Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, and where all of a sudden by year two, when they're probably competing a bit more, you might have a star left tackle. And I think there's value in that too. That part probably can't be spoken, but I think it's there.
Right. Encouraging stuff. I'm creeping toward 11 win, Chris.
Oh no.
You know,
I want you to get there because it'll be a better podcast if we're arguing about it. But
yeah, well, there's time. There's plenty of time.
Yeah.
So I want to touch on a topic that I wanted to ban for a couple weeks, but it has naturally presented itself, and that is my plot of land on Emory Island, because if these guys are blocking for a former five-star recruit who's had his troubles at LSU, whether his fault or not, and now is in a position where he's impressing the new coaching staff and he looked good in practice. Am I wrong, Brody?
Yeah, he's looked really good across the board in practice. Like, yeah, there was that one where we saw a fumble or two, but like, I don't know. That didn't really worry me. He's looked really good. We've mentioned how physically built he looks, but he's just looking impressive in each practice. And we saw in Saturdays, as I tweeted, like, there was one rep where it sounds like I had somebody in my DMs arguing that the whistle was blown before this happened, so it was why it looked this bad. But I don't know. But basically, he ran over Joe Fuscia and just like stayed up and kept going, you know. And it was a really impressive run by Emory, especially because Fuscia's a really physical safety who's laid out some people. So it's not like it's some nobody's running over. Yeah, Emory looks really good. I mean, I think it's, I never want to overreact like an LSU social media clip, but even that video they made with Mike Denbrock where he was mic'd up, there's that scene after he fumbles where he's like, all right, you know, hey, it's not like we're going to stop giving you the ball. I'm not going to let that happen. Like, there really are some unspoken vibes that, like, he is the guy. He is going to be, like, the star if he gets it all together. And then you compound that with Kelly's been really – first week of practice, he was really high on him with me, but then this week even further went, like – he is doing everything we ask of him. The off-the-field stuff, it sounds like he's implying, has been like he has stepped up in every way and gotten all that handled. And it's always tricky to also clarify, like, because we all know, right? There's guys who have like an issue, but there's also guys who are like the bad eggs. Mm-hmm. And John Emory was never in the bad egg camp, I don't think. or at least not like John Emery's a good liked guy. He's not like a problem. I think there was just some issues with like overall commitment, stuff like that. And I think he's kind of ironed that out. Kelly, I don't have a quote in front of me, but Kelly had some really strong quotes Saturday about like he has gotten the commitment down and now like football and academics are his focus. So I think there's reason for a lot of optimism on John Emery Island. I was there last August and then it fell through for obvious reasons, but and so were you. But yeah, man, it might be time.
I mean, on a real note, John has been through a lot in his time at LSU, from being the up and coming star on a national title team to LASIK surgery. Do you remember
also
that
to being
thing?
Freaking humbled during that national title run, like getting benched. Yes. Joe Burrow, like literally telling the coaches to pull this kid because he missed a block and didn't know what he was doing. That's a great story, actually. But to continue, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then with all the academic stuff that may have been his fault, may not have been his fault, it's in the past now, but been a tough time for John at LSU. And I'm very impressed that he's still here with the transfer. It would have been very easy to transfer, and he would have had a ton of suitors. So I'll be inside painting my award posters that I'll break out halfway through the year if he does well. But they're going to stay inside the house right now, but I'll put them in the yard, you know, probably a little too early, but they're still going to be there during the season.
Yeah, I think you got to make sure people see them now. You know, you can't just put them up later. So I think it's the right call.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Okay, we have to get to now of who will be handing John Emery the ball on first and 10 against Florida State. As you wrote, Miles Brennan and Jaden Daniels are the seemingly top two guys, but that guy who throws the ball real good, who I kind of swooned over last episode, Garrett Nussmeier, sounds like he's impressing some people that he might actually be in this competition for the starting job. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, no, it sounds like it, you know. And the main thing here to take away is that I just don't think it's just a two-man job. And I've been guilty of kind of framing this as, let's be honest, it's a two-man job, right? I mean, two-man race, sorry. Like, I really think we all kind of have operated under that assumption. And I always said, we all said, like, Nussmeier's talented as anyone, just, you know, just probably going to take a little time. And, you know, then again, back to the coach's clinic, you talk to some people and it's just like, hey, I actually think Nussmeier's actually had the best camp so far. You know, like Nussmeier's the one who's been the most kind of consistent day to day, and his talent is obviously through the roof. So it's not like he's just stable. I think, you know, what I've heard, he's kind of playing within himself more. You know, he's kind of, you know, and he talked about that in his interview, I believe last week as well, you know, about how he even said, I'm not just some stupid gunslinger, I believe was the quote. And, you know, how, because he's smart. That's what makes it so tricky. I think he got labeled as like one of those like Manziel-like just gunner. It's like I wrote a feature on him before he came here. He's smart. He thinks things through. He's a well thought out kid. He used to write like weekly diaries for SI.com like about his recruitment and like his life. Like he's a smart kid. I think he was in this kind of zone of like knowing what that balance of like what you can do versus what you should do and all that. And like here's your talent, but how do you get the most out of it? And I do think things are clicking. And as we talked about the last 2 weeks, like there are moments in spring where he's thrown the best ball. Like he makes the best plays, but you're just kind of like, yeah, but he's raw. And I think how would I phrase this? Maybe we have overplayed the
rawness. Maybe he's not as raw as we thought.
Yeah, I think we've overplayed that card like a little bit. And he became so like overrated, he was underrated or something. Because, basically my takeaway is I'm not saying I think Nussmeier is going to win the job, but it's at least a three-man battle. And I've also, you know, to bounce off that, you know, some people said Jaden Daniels had like two of his best practices last week and he really clicked. And as I talked about, Brennan's looked really good. So I think it's a battle. Now, there is the element, of course, of, you know, maybe they don't, if it's close, maybe, you know, I think Nussmeier's patient. I don't think he's trying to book it out. So I think he maybe let him have, part of bringing Daniels in, I think, was to let Nussmeier keep developing. So maybe you don't force it if you have somebody older who's ready, but I think it's a battle.
Best guy plays.
Best guy plays.
Yeah. We don't imagine that they're going to name a starter at the end of spring, right?
I would be pretty shocked. Yeah. I think you'll start seeing more of a pecking order by the end of spring. You know, like more of like, okay, here's the actual reps. But I do not think there will be a starter.
Okay. Because, you know, they're, with the transfer portal, and one day I'm going to stop saying that, maybe in 10 years when it stops being new to me. But I mean, the way kids move now is different. So, you know, is, if say Miles Brennan gets the job, is Jaden Daniels out of here by the end of spring? Is he sticking around? Is like, I'm fascinated to see how that works now with a crowded race, a three-man race right now for the starting quarterback. And like you said, it doesn't seem like Nussmeier is leaving, but still there's a lot of dudes in that room. And if there is any clarity that one of them might not be the guy, and depending on that guy's situation, like, I just feel like I wouldn't be shocked if somebody leaves at the end of spring. Is that off?
It's not off. I will say my first answer is I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I very rarely just flat out say that. I don't know. I would be pretty surprised if either Howard or Nussmeier left in the next few months. Yes, I'd be pretty surprised by that. So obviously it goes back to Daniels and Brennan. The thing that helps their case is both of them are graduates. Right. So I could be so wrong, but I don't think there's anything stopping Daniels from going somewhere else right away.
That's what I'm wondering too.
Yeah, I don't think, because he is a graduate transfer. Now there might be more. The one I would love to look into is, because obviously the deadline's already passed for the free exemption transfer for normal classmen within the SEC, right? You can't go SEC to SEC anymore without having to sit out. But I don't know if the grad transfer thing makes that different. I just literally don't know. But yeah, it's like Brennan, he's not going to sit out another year. There's just no way. So if he gets the writing on the wall that it's time, you know, that it's someone else, yeah, I think it's reasonable to think he might leave. Daniels is tricky because he does have the other year, and he talked about like needing to get better and all these things. You hear mixed things. There's some people you talk to are like, he gets it and like he wants to stay 2 years if he needs to. You talk to a lot of other people and some stories I've written, and it's like, he left to go get his NFL stock up. So like, that's what I'm struggling with. So I don't know. And if we're just being realist, yeah, it's reasonable to expect one of those two won't be here in August. But I also don't exactly see where it happens. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's totally. Like, if Brennan didn't leave before, like, what's his place right now? That's like, no brainer. I'm going there and I'm the guy. I don't really know. And then Daniels, it's like, man, he left for another school, didn't get the job. What's his stock? Like, so that's I don't know the instrument, you know, I don't know what it looks like, but it's reasonable, of course.
I'm not sure about Daniels transferring twice. I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if that's allowed to go to another school after you just transferred into a school. I'm not sure. I'll have to, we'll check on that for you guys. Or if one of you knows, let me know. But I'm just fascinated to see, because you're right. It's, and maybe both of them stay, and we have this two-headed quarterback monster thing that I've never been a fan of at LSU. But maybe it works then. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be fascinating. But the other thing is that we're not going to have like final resolution this spring. You know?
Definitely not. Yeah, definitely
not. Let's see. Oh, let's talk about the secondary. Sorry, yeah. I zoned out there for a second.
Okay, buddy.
The secondary, our other big worry. You had a note in there about Jerick Bernard-Converse being out for the spring. He has a Jones fracture. They don't seem too worried about him though, right?
Yeah, they don't. I think he's been out for a few weeks, quite frankly, and we've noticed he's been out, but you know, it was the first time we really had a good chance to ask about it. And yeah, Brian Kelly told us he had a Jones fracture. think he got that repaired a few weeks ago, and he is there. There's no real concern. They think he's going to be good to go for June summer workouts and all that. So that in its own isn't necessarily worrisome, but I think the big takeaway, and I think I wrote this in last week's like Seen and Heard piece, was I think there's a thing though of like when he's gone, then you really notice the depth problem where it's like, okay, yeah, you added three transfers at three corner spots. You feel good about all three of them, but when he's gone, suddenly your starting outside corners are Mekhi Garner from UL, who is a physical stub. I'm not like sure he's ready to be an SEC corner. And Demaryius McGee, who, you know, is young, I just don't think has that high of stock yet. And it's like, I'm like, Ra'Darius Jones is behind him. And you're just like, oh, as much as those transfers look good, like, this is really thin. And Greg Brooks is awesome at nickel. And we'll get to that in a second. But it's like, oh, this is actually concerning. So I think the takeaway from Bernard Converse being out is they need to get more creative. They need to figure something out because they can't just assume these three guys are going to be healthy all year. You just can't. So they have to look into something more. I think there's two things going on behind the scenes that are going to be really interesting to track. One,
yes,
there have been several, you know, I think there's a lot of indications that LSU is in the driver's seat to land Ohio State transfer Seven Banks. That's tricky in its own right, but I'm going to save that for a second. And then, which I think will probably happen in the coming days. And then the other is Greg Brooks, the corner from the nickel from Arkansas, who's had, from what I can tell, a really good spring. I've talked with him on here a few times. It looks, he told us Saturday that he's actually going to, like, the second half of spring, he's moving back to outside corner. Like, they, like, before spring, they planned on that. They want him to, like, practice at both. And that's fascinating because when you think about it, and I'm not saying this was literally their plan, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but from my perspective, when I look at the depth chart, it's like, you feel kind of decent about nickel because it's like, all right, you got Brooks and then Sage Ryan's this five-star really good talent behind him. But outside corner, you don't really feel good about the backups right now. So it makes sense to maybe add some flexibility. This is speculating, but like, so that, hey, if you need Brooks to play outside corner, he can, and then you slide Sage Ryan up. That makes a lot of sense. So I think that those are the two things worth following. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. And that's Seven with a Y, by the way, for everybody Googling. It took me a second. I mean, it all tracks.
Yeah. I think the thing everyone needs to follow with Seven Banks, though, is health. So Seven Banks was a perfectly good Ohio State corner, right? You know, like, Ohio State cranks out corners. I don't think he's one of their, like, special guys, but he is a solid corner. Did his job, you know? I think he's – let's put it this way. I think he was good enough to – he wasn't a liability. He was good enough to play at Ohio State, which means he's definitely good enough to play with his LSU cornerback room, right? I think that's fair. Now, what's tricky is he had a really bad hip injury. And first off, hip injuries are as scary as anything. And he also had a knee injury last spring, but you also just kind of hear some things about, like, his hip might have been, you know, like, there might be some real issues with that hip. So yeah. I say all that to say you would hope LSU is doing its due diligence on, you know, the physical there, making sure he's good to go, all that. I guess it's not the NFL where you can, like, wait to give a scholarship until a physical. I don't know. But yeah, I think that's something they really got to do due diligence on. Counterpoint, you have a few scholarship spots open. Maybe it just is worth that risk because it's all about depth anyway right now, right? Maybe it is worth the risk to be like, hey, he might not be, you know, even if he gets set, like, maybe he's fine and now you got four good corners and maybe he's not, but it's like he still, like, was able to add depth until then. I don't know. But that's the big question mark with that you have to follow. And then on the other side of things, let's say Brooks goes out to outside and Sage Ryan starts at nickel. Sage Ryan's been banged up. I mean, he was banged up all of his freshman year. And then Greg Brooks even told us, he's like, yeah, Sage looks really great, but he's, like, still dealing with some nicks here and there. Like, so I think, you know, we're on year two, basically, of Sage Ryan always being kind of banged up. So I don't know if you're, like, 100% there either. Which goes, the overall takeaway from this is, I think they're doing a good job of, like, covering different bases for different scenarios. You know what I mean? So that, like, you are probably covered if you need to go to Sage. And then if Sage is hurt, okay, it makes sense because now you got Seven Banks, like, in that if they get Seven Banks. So I just think there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on at corner, and I don't know if that's going to work out or not.
Something to watch, and, you know, maybe as the offensive line kind of shakes out, we should turn our focus to that secondary as a over-analysis offspring, or wellspring, I should say. Killing it with the words today.
Nailed it, buddy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Birdie, I think it's time to get to our favorite segment now.
Last 5 minutes club, baby.
It's the last 5 minutes club. All right. I do have to acknowledge friend of the podcast, Emil McClellan. He asked last week as an addendum to the pizza, what is your favorite pizza topping? I want you to give me two toppings for a pizza that you will go for every single time, if that's all you get.
So I'm sorry, man. You're going to like really get mad at me. But the truth is I am like a pizza minimalist in a lot of ways.
Ugh.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to not eat something with a bunch of toppings.
You're going to tell me, oh my God, I'm really like a great cheese or pepperoni pizza is what I'm going
my
for.
My rule is the first time I go to any place, I judge it by its pepperoni. And yeah, like most of the time I'm craving pizza is because I'm craving a pepperoni pizza. Like, I still love the other things I'm going to eat. I'm not like, this isn't like a take that I think it's the only right way. But yeah, man, when I want pizza, I'm craving a pepperoni pizza. So pepperoni is my answer. Like, I'm not going to apologize for that.
Nothing else you'd add to that? I mean, like,
no, there's tons of things. That's the thing. But like, if you're asking what I'm going to order, that's it. I'm going to order pepperoni every time. But yes, there's so many other things I love on there. You know, it's not one or the other. Like, I do love a mushroom. That ranks pretty high. This isn't a topping, so I guess this is not. This is cheating. But I love a really, especially here, we have so many places that do it well. I love a perfectly executed white pizza, like where they really know what they're doing, like the ricotta, you know, all that. It's just like perfect. So I don't know why I've been watching Sopranos lately. I just really wanted to. Like, it's one of my favorite things, the way they just overpronounce like random foods. So I think those are my, like, I like a bacon if it's on there. Those are my main. Like, I don't like pineapple on pizza. I'm not gonna go like, I don't make it a personality trait like some people do, but yeah, it's not my thing.
I am a big pineapple on pizza guy. Haters,
so is Claire,
please come at me. It's great. It's what I get at Fleur de Lis. Anyway, moving
on. What? Really?
Yeah, I get a Hawaiian pizza for
you. Wait, you didn't tell me Canadian yours. Bacon, all you said is pineapple.
Canadian bacon pineapple.
Those are your two.
Yep.
What were Emil's?
I don't think Emil offered. He just asked for topping discussion. Well,
you
so
gotta work up your friendship level, you know? Ask about other people too, you know? That's healthy.
It's fine. Look, okay, we have to move on from this. Enough pizza talk. Or maybe if you guys send us a lot more pizza stuff, we'll talk about it. I have a last 5 minute question that pertains to LSU football, actually, from reader Catherine Briley, listener Catherine Briley, I should say. I really liked her question here. She properly noticed that Tyrann Mathieu had a parade around LSU's campus last week, and rightfully so. Tyrann visited every single sports facility, it felt like, and did an interview
with everybody.
It's honestly amazing. I mean, I know you weren't here when Tyrann was here, but it was my senior year of college. It is incredible that Tyrann is, you know, so loves LSU still after. And we don't really talk about what a poor end he had at LSU. And looking back, I think LSU might have treated him a little poorly. It was just a different time. And, you know, we don't have to rehash everything, but Tyron did not get the right end of the stick at the end of his LSU tenure. And yet he is papered all over the LSU facility. The new head coach welcomes him in like a king.
They literally, the second he steps off the plane, social media is putting up like he's in town. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
God.
I mean, he has a baseball jersey. He's throwing out pitches. He is just Mr. LSU, the king of LSU. And I love it because I love Tyron, and he is arguably one of my favorite players ever besides Joe Burrow. It's tough to choose between those two. But anyway, that all comes to how Tyron has said that he wants to be LSU's head coach one day.
Yeah.
So Catherine asks, she asked to build out a coaching staff. Catherine, I think that's a lot. I would love to hear people's suggestions.
We can try.
But what I'm going to ask you, Brody, is the players that you have covered here, who do you think are your top three head coaching candidates from those teams?
From the teams just I've covered? Because I feel like can we just go all LSU? Because Tyron is up there.
Yeah, but I mean, I was trying to be nice to you because you weren't around the program.
I'm just saying,
we
don't have to put firm rules. I might lean toward those, but because okay, it's tricky, right? I have a lot of thoughts on the player coaching dynamic, right? Like, hey, shoot, if you're watching Winning Time, you learn like Jerry West, one of the great basketball minds of all time, one of the great basketball GMs ever, just not meant to be a coach. That's pretty common, right? Like when you're the best player, it's actually really hard to be a great coach because you don't relate. That's why Kobe Bryant could never, he's literally, rest in peace, that was his biggest problem, was he got mad at his teammates because he just literally couldn't relate to other people not trying as hard as him. Like, and I think that's common. So,
right.
But Burrow's tricky because Burrow's superpower is kind of like actually understanding everyone.
I mean, I think we should honestly ban that answer because it's
good.
So easy.
I love that. Good.
Okay. Because it's easy, and I think Joe would be a great coach if he wants to be. So he has an automatic spot at the table. We don't even have to talk about it.
Okay, fair. I actually appreciate that. Make a better discussion. First off, if you have anyone, jump in while I'm thinking.
Yeah, I will. Go ahead.
I think, you start with like just pure IQ stuff. Jacoby Stevens ranks high.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is Jacoby Stevens is also he's an intense guy. I don't, can be a hothead, and like I don't know if that's like also the best fit, or maybe it's a perfect fit. I wonder. Foster Moreau ranks high because of like he just kind of thinks like a coach already, He's number 18, he fits in that thing. I think Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl, even like tweeted like a year ago, like this guy's gonna be a head coach when it's done. He comes up, but I feel like there's someone better that I'm missing. Jump in if you have anyone.
I'm thinking too. Well, okay, it's easy to start. The 18s is a very easy well for us.
It's
to pull
safe.
From.
Yeah,
it's very safe. I'm thinking of Lee. I mean, she mentioned Devin White as maybe part of it. I mean, she mentioned it as part of a different question, but I thought it was a good inclusion.
I mean, I think Devin White would be a good coach in general because, like, he actually did a fantastic job. I will always give him credit for this, of, like, always helping, like, coach younger guys. Like, he was very good at that. So, yeah.
Well, and I think you also have to have the charisma that Devin has and that a lot of these guys have to be a recruiter. I mean, we're going realistic here.
No, it's totally true. Yeah, but then there's like some guys, it's like, hey, maybe they're more of like a position coach than like a scheme guy. Or some guys, maybe like Foster Moreau might be an even better head coach than he would be like a scheme guy. I don't know. Okay, there's so many. He might be a little quiet because like Lloyd Cushenberry does rank kind of high. People like, I think Lloyd Cushenberry will be a great O-line coach one day. Like, there are more talented guys than Lloyd Cushenberry, but he was already like coaching this O-line as a senior, So I think he'll be an O-line coach one day. I really am going to think about this for a second. I'm not giving up yet because I think there's some great ones. You haven't jumped in confidently with a pick yet.
I haven't yet because it's a tough question. I mean, I like Foster Moreau. It's maybe recency bias, but I do like Damone Clark. Seems like he has the temperament for it and he has the devotion for it. Am I being stupid there?
Not stupid. I don't quite see it, but I mean, obviously I'm not like Damone Clark's a really good dude and smart. So yeah, I mean, it's totally possible.
What about Trey White?
So I will actually admit ignorance there. I'm pretty familiar with like most of the old player stories. You know what I mean? Like I know Tyron, I know all that stuff. feel like Trey White, I kind of missed. Like, I was the year after me, and I never got, like, the full Trey story. So I don't really know a ton about Trey.
I like him as a candidate.
I love it. Oh, man. I think Jacoby Stevens does have to be somewhere in there. Like, Jacoby Stevens, okay. I think, would be, like, a general manager or something if it works out well. And the funny thing is Burrow might be more of a GM one day, like a John Elway. You know, I actually think that.
I could see that. Maybe that would fit Burrow better.
I mean, it's why I think Tom Brady is like, I mean, it's already been rumored, but like Tom Brady's probably going to be a team owner, like Michael Jordan. Yeah. Like, I think that's something Tom Brady will be really good at. The bummer is I want, after this 2020 Bucs season, I want Tom Brady to be a coach because he's actually in the category of stars who I think could be a coach because you literally saw him in 2020. Like, remember, like, all the stories, like, mid-season, basically Bruce Arians was like, okay, run your offense. And just, like,
yeah,
he just ran his offense. Like, it's like, oh, man, I want to see him coach. Man, why we're going to – like, I'm not giving
do
up
we,
on
do
this.
Do we think – okay, here's
because
here's
I just – I know I'm going to be like – someone's going to message us. And I'm going to be so mad about it. And I need I to know. Think – there's someone obvious.
I mean, do you think that a kicker could be a good coach? Like, what about Cade York?
The like, answer is unfortunately no, but Cade York is a really smart guy, and he will – probably be good at anything. Oh my god. Okay, so corners, safeties, linebackers.
That's why I said Damone Clark, because his linebackers have to process a lot. And
ooh, I have a candidate. Heavy. I do have a candidate. First off, he is very smart. But like not even from the like I think he's going to be some scheme guru thing. I just could see him being a very good like college coach, Rashard Lawrence.
Oh, I can see that. Oh,
because it's more than just, first off, he is smart. I don't want to make it sound like he's actually one of the smartest guys on the team, but like it is more than just being like a smart football guy, right? It's like culture stuff. It's like maturity. Yeah. It's like I'm like, "Oh, I think Rashard Lawrence would actually be a great head coach."
That's a good call, because that's what it is, a better distillation of what I was trying to say with temperament for recruiting for being that CEO.
Yeah, totally. I like that. Cause like, by the way, like Brad Foco wants to be on TV, and I think he will be, like, he'll be very good on TV. If it works out, like that, he gets that opportunity. So like he'd be in that category. Okay.
Rashard Lawrence, that's our head coach, everybody.
Yeah. I've never been more frustrated ending an episode because it's such an incredible prompt and I can't quite get it down. But I love that. I do like Rashard Lawrence.
I mean, the great thing is that we can discuss this on social media, on email, and, you know, we'll keep the talk going. I mean, I'm sure everybody is going to just send us every name that they can think of in the best way.
And I'm
going to
argue them.
Rashard only had 6 tackles last year. You know, maybe he could just spend a few years in the NFL and come back and coach LSU. Sounds great to me.
I mean, did he have a really good year in his first year, though? Also, we don't judge like those kind of defensive linemen by tackles. Come on.
I'm just saying, Brody. Damn.
He had 7 starts this year. Like, that's good. His job is to take up blocks.
I think that's a great thing. Everybody send us your candidates. What is our emoji this week, Brody?
Oh, man, I didn't think about it. I'm thinking pencil.
Pencil.
Just trying to get as random as I can each time.
I love it. Well, pencil in us for your last 5-minute questions, and we're going to have a good time. I mean, I honestly, this is my favorite part of the show now. As much as I love our football talk, this is where we can really become ourselves. And I was serious about that pizza party. So let us know if you guys would be interested in that, and we'll try to figure something out for maybe a live show in the future. So anything else? Anything I missed, Brody?
No, man. Good podding.
Great pod. Thank you guys for listening. Rate us 5 stars everywhere, and we'll see you next week.